Welcome to the Baptist Joint Committee Podcast. This episode features the 2013 Religious Liberty Council Luncheon keynote address from Susie Painter, the Executive Coordinator of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. On June 28th in Greensboro, North Carolina, Painter received the J.M. Dawson Religious Liberty Award from the Baptist Joint Committee. She delivered this speech titled Teacups, Tevia, and the First 16.
I'm looking very carefully at our program that mentions this award. And I'm just checking it. Because there, honestly and truly, is no more unlikely person to be receiving this honor. There is no amount of predicting. I mean, you could take Moneyball data and you would not put this woman and this award on the same stage. I really am so honored in the humblest of ways. Because of this unlikely nature, I really want to take a moment of witness. You need to know something of the story because I'm nobody but you. The you that took ownership of a conviction that we all have has been given to us all, this conviction of religious liberty and the separation of church and state. I took it up and I won't put it down. Before this time, religious liberty and the separation of church and state, something this valuable, this esoteric, well, it was about the equivalent of an English China teacup to me. Respected? Fine. Valuable. Like the Wedgwood Florentine or the English Renaissance Royal Doulton that's in my cabinet at home. Fine and fragile and beautiful, but distant and rarely thought of. But that teacup, it came off the shelf and into daily use in 1978. I was a reading language arts teacher at Lamar Junior High School in Austin, Texas, and a shy but very talented musically eighth grader was in my class. Her name was Robin Murray O'Hare. This name will resonate with some of you who will remember her adopted mother and grandmother, Madeline Murray O'Hare. And for those of you too young to know the name, except for on a social studies quiz somewhere, I'll remind you that she's best known for the Murray v. Curlick case, which was joined to Abington v. Shemp for the Supreme Court decision to take Bible reading out of American public schools. Madeline Murray O'Hare was the outspoken founder of American Atheist and became so controversial that Life magazine called her the most hated woman in America. Madeline had officially adopted her granddaughter to be her daughter so that she could actually have unfettered access to the public schools. This was in her hometown of Austin, Texas. So Madeline came on day one of the school year. She came to the teachers' meeting, and she made her signature pronouncement. She looked at us as teachers, and she said, "You people, you solve problems. Me, I make problems. That's how I make my living." Exactly what she said. And she said, "I will not be back in this school until I come back with a bullhorn and a TV camera to tell you how you are violating my rights and the rights of my daughter. Goodbye." We were stunned. It was a strange juxtaposition because I was a Christian. I was the wife of a minister. And yet I was understanding that my beliefs about religious liberty were really actually pretty close, you know, to the most hated woman in America. I really didn't want that to be true. I really did not want to defend the rights of this eighth grade student to non-belief, to the point that it made so many of us uncomfortable. That didn't feel fair to me. That did not feel fair. But defending the right of this child to unbelief was just. I had to think about the difference between things feeling fair and being just. not the same. I had to think about my Baptist forebears, who were also ostracized for being part of a very inconveniencing group that raised a ruckus over our radical beliefs. I had to come face to face with the words freedom of conscience and know that they were not just for me. Darn it. It was very hard to defend the rights of someone who was hated. There was tension and there was anger, especially from the other parents in our school. And of course, as December approached, do I need to tell you, there was a lot of tension about what the upcoming Christmas holidays and all the traditional Christmas activities at our school. Along with my friend Cynthia Sloan, I was the sponsor of the student council. We were in charge of hosting the holiday lunch and concert that came right before Christmas break. Each homeroom would come into the cafeteria. They would decorate their tables with glitz that they brought from home and red and green paper, you know, around the tables. And then the kids would go off to the concert, and then later they would come back into the cafeteria for the holiday meal and an early release day. Well, after, you know, 70 homerooms had been decorated, it was pretty much chaos in that cafeteria. But last table decorated, last kid off to the concert, Cynthia and I sat down on the steps to take a breath, and the doors came open. It was Madeline Marie O'Hare. She had a TV crew. She had a bullhorn. And she began to go down every decorated table until she found some offending item. She would pick it up and say, "Too religious." And then she would reach down and get the masking tape under the edge of the table, take that red and green paper, and do this until the children's Christmas was on the floor. I could take her beliefs. I could even defend her sometime. But when she destroyed the children's work for her purposes, I just really actually wanted to hit her. Yeah, I'm a small person, and, you know, when you feel like you want to hit somebody and you're as small as I am, you know that your emotions are really taking over. We barely made it through that year, though, without physical violence, mostly from parents and teachers and from other students towards Robin. You know, I just thought, if she could just be nice about her beliefs, please be nice. But she wasn't. Actually, her life and the life of this granddaughter, Robin, ended in murder. Religious liberty and its expression is not sanitized. It is not nice. This is one of the planet's most important freedoms. And if you think it's a Hallmark card, you're wrong. And you're barely worthy of the name Baptist. Religious liberty is not as fragile as a teacup. One lesson I learned along this path is how to talk about justice. It's not simply an opinion or a position, especially justice rooted in biblical foundations and morality. It's a way of processing your thoughts, your feelings, and often it's a way of holding seemingly opposite or opposing feelings and thoughts, but holding them together in a cruciform way. Do you remember Fiddler on the Roof? Tevye? Okay. Tevye arranges a marriage for his daughter, Zidel, to a rich but undesirable butcher, right? Remember that? Zidel pleads with her father to listen instead to Modal, the poor tailor. Modal intervenes with uncommon zeal to ask for Zidel's hand, and seeing the love in his daughter's eyes, Tevye weighs the prospects of a poor tailor as a son-in-law. He says he's beginning to talk like a man. On the other hand, what kind of match would that be, you know? And then he says, on the other hand, he's a hard worker. But on the other hand, he has absolutely nothing. On the other hand, nowhere to go but up. Tradition, he ends. One of the most important things that our religious and biblical heritage does is give us a way of talking about justice when confronted with all these new problems. Because new problems invariably call for us to talk about things and look at things from more than one angle, especially in the realm of religious liberty, rights, and boundaries. Like Tevye, we need to cultivate this rhythm of on the one hand, on the other hand. And think about it. It echoes in the Psalms. You know, the Psalms that start the first three verses are exaltation, and by verse four, we're into lamentation. In the parables of Jesus, is it the prodigal or the older brother? And in the Judean countryside, is it the Mount of Transfiguration or the Garden of Gethsemane? We see it in Peter. Denial or the feed my sheep kind of love? My experience with Madeline taught me that I was not finished with justice and the exploration of religious liberty until I had thought in a Tevye rhythm. This type of processing, this type of moral deliberation, it is counter to our culture. It is not an answer, but it is a way of finding justice. This is why it's so important to model deliberation in our congregations. How to think morally about a subject like religious liberty, and how to arrive at just responses. It feels awkward, and it feels inadequate to process in this way, but it is just what justice requires, especially where religious liberty is at stake. In 1978, I made a firm conviction. Odd. I made this commitment that in my Sunday school classes, on women's retreat, in vacation Bible school, at youth camp, in my personal conversations, I was going to talk about religious liberty. I was going to talk about separation of church and state. I mean, if this indeed is an enduring legacy of our heritage, then I had better speak up about it deliberatively. That decision led me through these conversations in private life to engage publicly with elected officials. For more than 35 years, I've met in offices with countless political aides and explained this Tevye type of thinking, this issue of the Baptist belief in religious liberty and separation of church and state. More modern-day conflict with American atheists find me opposing their position, which calls for public spaces to be religion-free zones. As Charles Haynes wrote recently in the May version of Report from the Capitol, separation, taken this far to be religious-free zones, is no friend of religious liberty. Religious people and religious institutions have a right to participate fully in the public square. The First Amendment does not guarantee atheists or anyone else freedom from religion. The First Amendment does, however, guarantee freedom from a government-imposed religion, a core condition of freedom of conscience. Religious liberty is universal freedom of religious conscience, and that freedom goes beyond our internal thoughts, and it extends to action. The Baptist Joint Committee is embarking on a new education campaign. Charles, you don't know how long we've waited for you. To equip you and your congregation to know more and to do more for this precious liberty. So when they ask you to help, say yes. When they ask you to volunteer, be a witness. Practice your liberty of conscience, and God will use your conversation. In an increasingly pluralistic culture, among the polarized ideological discourse from both the right and the left, with well-funded and vocal advocates, the public square needs to hear the deliberative thoughts of sincerely religious and faithful people saying and modeling simple but profound statements of conscience. I would like it if my beliefs were everywhere, but I will not ask for state support for them, direct or implied. And on the other hand, do not shame me for trying or try to remove my religious rights, my right to freedom of expression, because my faith expression doesn't coerce you. In speaking of tolerance, Helen Keller said this: "It is the greatest gift of mind. It requires the same effort of the brain that it takes to balance oneself on a bicycle." Now, this from a blind woman. Do you know the first 16 words of the Bill of Rights? "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." That gem took Tevye thinking on steroids to work this out word by word and phrase by phrase. And the world vies for and against this kind of freedom. It is like a balancing blind woman on a bicycle. Their lawyers, like Brent and Holly and Nan, Melissa Rogers, Buzz Thomas, Doug Laycock, but they cannot protect religious liberty. They cannot secure our freedom and our future. Albert Einstein was a true and sort of unpredictable voice on this topic. He said, "Laws alone cannot secure freedom of expression. In order that everyone present their views without penalty, there must be a spirit of tolerance in the population." So this is our chapter. This is our chapter. You are the voice. It's your voice that needs to speak, talking through your own confusions, your own passions towards justice, God's kind of biblical justice. In July 2001, a panel of the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the constitutionality of Virginia's minute of silence laws. This action in Virginia set off copycat laws all over the country, including in Texas. By 2003, our family friend Jeff Wentworth from San Antonio had filed a bill in the Texas Senate to be a copycat bill to that Virginia law for the minute of silence. He was convinced that his law would be upheld because the Virginia law had been, and so he imported identical language. Like all education bills, the language for this new minute of silence law would be added to the Texas Education Code. There was a small reference in the bill to the chapter, paragraph, and, you know, section, all that stuff, where this bill language would be inserted. It was just kind of a series of numbers at the beginning of the bill. And I went to talk to Senator Wentworth about this topic of religious liberty, the minute of silence, how he felt about it, what he was going to say about it, and the implications for classrooms and for religious freedoms. One problem with his proposed bill is that this section, this code, into which the minute of silence would be added in Texas law, was a very limiting section of the code. Although it seemed identical to what had been done in Virginia, the implication that if put in this section would actually make the minute of silence very limited and not at all what he intended. It took 6 presentations to him to go back and forth, to show him some vulnerable sections of this, and convince him that we just couldn't rely on a copycat of Virginia for this law to be sufficient. What did I know? I'm not a lawyer. But I could model thinking about the issue from more than one angle. The bill passed in 2003 and predictably was challenged in court by 2006. Unlike the unreviewed version passed in Illinois, the Texas law was upheld by the circuit court. 2009, 6 years later, and 2 court challenges later, I got a handwritten note from Senator Jeff Wentworth. It briefly said, "Minute of silence upheld. Thanks for keeping me working at it." I kind of felt like the poor tailor that got the girl. What matters? What's worth your time and your thoughts? What's worth your conviction? We live in a world full of competing ideas and plenty of distractions that we've got to say no to in order to say yes to some other things. In the past 35 years, I've worked on scores of religious liberty issues, championing some, dismantling others, and, you know, amending the daylights out of some pretty bad bills. We treat our most sacred freedoms like they're distant teacups, not really ours, except in some decorative sense. Oh, we'll exercise our bodies to hip-hop abs and P90X. It's time to put some energy into exercising our freedom of conscience for religious liberty, to lift our voices, to defend the religious liberty and the rights of others here and around the world. Justice requires action. Jesus said so.
That was Cooperative Baptist Fellowship Executive Coordinator Susie Painter delivering the keynote address at the 2013 Religious Liberty Council Luncheon in Greensboro, North Carolina. Following the speech, Painter received the J.M. Dawson Religious Liberty Award from the Baptist Joint Committee. For more on this annual event, visit our website at bjconline.org/luncheon.